in.
Yeah, she's.
We are going to start our committee. I don't think we quite have a quorum yet, and I know we've got a few things we're trying to sort out here, but it is 1 o'clock, and we want to start our committee on time. We've got somewhat abbreviated committee hearings this year, so we're going to try to be as efficient as we can in using the time we have available. I would like to welcome the public and members of the committee to our initial meeting of the Health and Human Services Committee. We appreciate your being here. 2, 3, 4, 6, 7. Do we have a quorum?
Oh, here. Last table.
Yes. We do have a quorum present, so we are officially can vote on things now if we wish. We are going to today hear a beginning of a presentation about the HHS budget area from our fiscal analyst, Dennis Albrecht, as soon as we get the technical issues resolved. But I would like to maybe take a few minutes and review a couple of things and then allow members to introduce themselves for purposes of so we all get to know who we are and also for those in the public who want to know who we are. But let me just make the schedule aware to the public. We will be meeting, it's kind of an unusual schedule this year, but we meet Mondays at 1 p.m. in this room, and Tuesday and Wednesday at 10:30 in this room. And we have committee time scheduled or available to us on Friday at 8:30 if we, as a committee, need to have that time. It's a little unusual schedule. I apologize for that, but that's what it'll be. Mondays at 1 o'clock, Tuesday and Wednesday at 10:30, and then if necessary, we'll meet. We have time on Friday reserved. For committee members, we'd have the folders, new committee members. If you have things you want to leave and not carry with you, leave them in the manila folders, and we will keep them for you. Just FYI, for purposes, when we get into hearing bills, members who have amendments or wish to have amendments would ask that you bring enough copies. If you would like staff to prepare copies of amendments, just get them to us in advance. If you don't wish to do that, then I would ask that you bring enough copies so that members of the committee would be able to look at them. I'd like to introduce the members of the staff, if we can. Sitting to my left is Andy Eilers, the committee legislative assistant, and on my right is Brad Beers, who is the committee administrator. And we have our members of Senate Council, Kate Kavanaugh, and is Joan?
Joan is here. She's not here today.
Joan White is our other member of Senate Council. She is not here today. And Dennis Albrecht, our fiscal analyst, will be making a presentation, so she is, or he is sitting at the presenter's table. Our research, Lydia, GOP research, and does the, I'm sorry, Gloria, back here for the DFL research. And I would like to ask our committee members if they would like to just introduce themselves briefly and make a couple of comments. We don't want this to be lengthy, but if you wish to make a brief statement or tell a little bit about who you are for the purposes of the public and the other committee, appreciate it. So why don't we start down at the end and let Senator Sharon start.
Okay, I'm Senator Kathy Sharon. I am from Senate District 23. That's Mankato, St. Peter, some of Sibley County, all of Nicollet County. And this is my second term. And my second, this will be my fifth year serving on these committees.
John Marty, District 54, which is seven suburbs north of St. Paul, and I'm glad to be here on the committee as well.
Senator Dan Hall, Senate District 40, my first term, of course, first time on the committee, Burnsville, Bloomington, a little bit of Savage.
Michelle Benson, District 49, Ham Lake, Andover, Coon Rapids. I, too, am a freshman and new to the committee.
I am Sean Nino. This is my second non-consecutive term. This will be my fifth year on the Health and Human Services Committee. The area I represent is roughly Chisago County, Isani County, and the city of St. Francis in Anoka.
Good afternoon. I'm Julie Rosen. I apologize, Mr. Chair, for being late. I'm handicapped, and so it takes me a while to get from the room I thought it was in down to here. I've been on Health Committee for probably 7 years, I believe, and very honored to be on Health Committee. And I serve District 24, which is five counties, all of Blue Earth County except Mankato, all of Waseca County except the town of Waseca, Faribault, Martin, and Watonwan County.
And just, I forgot to neglect it, I apologize. Senator Rosen is also the vice chair of the committee. Why don't we start down here, Senator Higgins.
Linda Higgins from North Minneapolis. I've been on this committee 10 years, and I'm starting my 15th year in the Senate.
Gretchen Hoffman, Senate District 10, which is Otter Tail County, Wadena County, a little corner of Becker County up north, and I'm a freshman. I'm glad to be here.
My name is Scott Newman. I am from Senate District 18. I am replacing Senator Dill. My district is all of McLeod County, all of Meeker County, and the western slice of Wright County, and I am a first-term senator.
I'm Michelle Fishback, and this is my 15th session, and I believe I have served on the Health and Human Services Committee in whatever form it was since I got here 15 years ago.
Linda Berglund, State Senator from Minneapolis.
Thank you. And I'm David Hand from Eden Prairie, District 42, also representing part of Minnetonka. I'm serving as chair of this committee this session. I'd like to just, again, for purposes of clarification for the schedule, with the next 2 weeks, we have some interruptions in the Senate schedule. We will be meeting tomorrow at 10:30. And Wednesday, which is our normal committee day, we will not be meeting due to the One Minnesota project over at the university at the Humphrey Center, so we will not have committee meeting on Wednesday. Following week on Monday is Martin Luther King. We will not meet on that day. Our session time has been then postponed until Tuesday, so we also will not meet on Tuesday. So we will meet today, tomorrow, and then the next meeting will be next week on Wednesday. And at that time, we will anticipate continuing with looking at the budget. I'm going to turn it over here to our fiscal analyst in a minute, but I wanted to make just a comment briefly about what we're going to do here, at least in the next few sessions. I would like to take this opportunity to make sure that the members of the committee have an opportunity to understand what goes into the budget area that we are going to be dealing with this year. I don't think it's any secret that we have a challenge in our state and with the budget. This is a significant budget area. It's one that has been projected to see the most significant or the largest growth. We have got to find a way to produce a balanced budget in the context of the other areas that we will have to have before us, but to do that in a way that is fiscally responsible and also, I think, addressing the priorities that we have as Minnesotans. To accomplish that, I'm asking for presentations to be made to help our newer members and maybe some of the members have been on the committee in the past to make sure we have a good understanding of what the components are of the budget. So today we will start with the numbers, the forecast numbers, where they are, and we are going to invite questions, anyone who wants to ask a question along the way. We also have, I believe, members from the department here to answer questions as needed. I hope they were invited. So, but that's the intent. We would like to make sure that people have a good understanding of where this, where the numbers are in the budget, what is the magnitude of the problem that we are dealing with, what are the things that we are funding, and where those resources are coming from. I'd also like to make sure that we have an understanding of the constraints that may be placed on some of those funds because of the federal laws that affect the spending in this budget area. So we will do our best in the next few meetings to understand that, and we anticipate a budget proposal at some point in February from the governor. So I'm not sure that we will be doing a substantial amount of crafting the budget until we see what the governor is recommending, but in the meantime, we'd like to make sure that people have an opportunity to understand what the forecast is like. So at that point, if there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer any questions on schedule or other things. I'd like to turn it over to our fiscal analyst, Dennis Albrecht, and he can begin to lead us through a presentation, although I understand we still have some technical difficulties. But go ahead.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I ask them to not fiddle with that anymore. So at least until next time, I'll just try and direct you when I'm changing page numbers. You have the same handout that I'm working on.
Excuse me.
Mr. Albrecht, will you please pull the microphone way up close to you, because I know it amplifies if it gets close enough.
As we move through the presentation, I'll try and direct you when I'm changing page numbers. You have the same presentation that I'm speaking off of in front of you. You have color copies. The members in the audience do not. And actually, I don't either, so hopefully I'm not going to make too many references to the colors on the charts. So going just into the presentation, page 2 is a list of the agencies that are in the jurisdiction of the Health and Human Services Budget and Policy Committee, with the Department of Human Services, the Department of Health, the Emergency Medical Services Board, the Council on Disability, the Ombudsperson for Mental Health and Developmental Disabilities, Ombudsperson for Families, and the health-related boards. At some point in the presentation, probably next week, we will get to the section that deals with the health-related boards. There are 16 of them, and they deal with a variety of health professions, and they are generally the licensing boards for the the professions that are listed. Going on to page number 3, this is the broadest perspective on the jurisdiction of the committee that we have. It's the all funds budget. And for this committee, it's $26.739 billion, which is 41% or so of the state all funds budget. On page 4 is a list of all of the funds under the jurisdiction of this committee. A couple of things to point out. One is that generally when we talk and list amounts in the Senate, in the legislature, they're dollars in thousands. And that's what the 3 zeros in parentheses mean, and that's why all of these numbers look smaller than they are. So the 11, what looks in writing $11.6 million is really $11.6 billion. And generally, although not always, if you wanted to know how much money is in any individual year in the biennium, it's about half of the money, but it depends on which program you're looking at whether or not that's going to be true. You can see by looking at this list that by far the two largest funds are the general fund and the federal fund. That will probably be most of the topic of discussion that we have this year. The general fund is generally what we speak about when we speak about the state budget. That is the fund that has a $6.2 billion projected deficit in it. All of these numbers in this entire presentation are based on the amounts that were in the November forecast. They will change probably not a whole lot when the February forecast comes out. Looking specifically at the list, you can see that for the entire committee, the general fund portion under this committee's jurisdiction is about $11.6 billion. And for the federal fund, it's about $12.1 billion. All of the other funds are proportionately smaller. The only other one that is likely to be a topic of conversation in any substantial way is the Health Care Access Fund, and that's about $1.4, $1.5 billion. Going on to page 5.
Mr. Albrecht, before you continue, and just the intent here, you're going to spend some time further on the presentation with each of these different funds. Is that correct, as part of your later presentation, to help us to see what's incorporated in these, for example, the special revenue fund? Is that part of your later presentation?
Mr. Chair and members of the committees, yeah, I probably should have said that the way this presentation is structured is to start at a very high level and look at the entire committee fund by fund, and then for each of the agencies to kind of repeat the process and go fund by fund for the agencies.
And so this begins that process on page 5. So for the entire budget jurisdiction, the general fund portion is $11.6 billion, and that's 30% of the state general fund budget. On page 6 is a chart showing of that $11.6 billion, how it's distributed among the agencies in the committee's jurisdiction. You can see that by far the largest proportion is in the Department of Human Services. It turns out that's because that's where the health care programs are administered. Another thing to point out is near the top there, the MA expansion contingency. That's the amount of money that is in the forecast for the expansion of the medical assistance program to include people who are under 75% of the federal poverty guidelines.
And Mr. Albrecht, just to clarify, this is money that was in the forecast related to the executive order that the governor signed last week. So is that correct, that the action that he took and the cost to the state budget was already in the forecast, and that represents that piece of that? Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. Moving on to page 7, again, this is at the highest level of the entire committee's jurisdiction, is the State Government Special Revenue Fund. This is where a variety of fees and other charges from things like licensing, examinations, permits, registration, certifications for a specific purpose are deposited into this fund and need to be appropriated each year by the legislature to be spent, and generally they are spent for the activities for which the amounts were paid, and usually within the agency that collected the money. Going on to page 8 is how the money in the State Government Special Revenue Fund is distributed among the agencies in the committee's jurisdiction. You can see that the largest proportion goes to the Department of Health. It's a lot of money, you'll probably notice. Some of the things they do in this area, in this fund, is regulate drinking water standards, HMO oversight, and regulating healthcare facilities. For the Emergency Medical Services Board, some of the things they do are ambulance licensing. They approve educational programs for emergency medical EMTs. And they certify EMTs. Going on to page 9 is the Healthcare Access Fund. You can see that the money that goes into the Healthcare Access Fund comes from a 2% provider tax that's paid by medical providers. A 1% gross premium tax on insurance premiums, and the FFP, which is Federal Financial Participation, it's federal matching funds that come to the state for administration of the Minnesota Care Program, which you see in the second bullet point is the primary use of money in the Healthcare Access Fund. There are also amounts in that fund that are used to fund health care access and quality improvement initiatives generally at the Department of Health. Slide number 10 shows how the health care access fund money is distributed among the agencies in the committee's jurisdiction. It also has a separate amount for, in this case, savings from the expansion of medical assistance of $415 million in the Healthcare Access Fund. The amount for the Department of Human Services is for medical provider payments. And as I said earlier, the amount for the Department of Health is for a variety of access initiatives and quality improvement initiatives for health care. Moving on to page 11 is the Special Revenue Fund. This fund is very similar to the state government Special Revenue Fund, except that generally the money that goes into this fund is statutorily appropriated, which basically means that the authority to spend that money is in law, and unless the legislature decides to change the law, the agencies who receive the funds have the authority to spend the money for the activities for which they receive the funds.
Mr. Albrecht, before you continue, just help me to understand the revenues for this fund are not coming from the general fund. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair and members, some money going into this fund is money that is appropriated in the general fund, and then the agencies, and I think this mostly applies to the Department of Human Services, has the authority to transfer money into this fund to be combined with money from other sources. One example is the Consolidated Chemical Dependency Treatment Fund, which is within the Special Revenue Fund. And then after the money is combined from a variety of sources, it is spent out of the Special Revenue Fund. And as the last bullet point there shows, there aren't that many direct appropriations out of this fund. So the authority to spend that money is in law. Page 12 shows the distribution of the Special Revenue Fund amounts for the committee. A substantial proportion of it is within the Department of Human Services. And as I have been educating myself about how many money is spent in this committee, and I just wanted to know more about that because it is $667 million. A lot of that money is because the state-operated services part of the Department of Human Services operates as a provider, and so they bill other entities for their services, and that money, as best I can tell, does run through this account. I'm sure they'll come forward and tell me if I'm wrong. Page 13 is the federal fund. This is the other largest fund in the committee's jurisdiction. It's about 45% of the money in the committee's jurisdiction. Obviously, the purpose of the fund is to receive money from the federal government to state agencies. Those state agencies do have statutory authority to seek federal funds. However, acceptance of the funds is subject to legislative review, and there are processes, both during session and when the legislature is not in session, that have to be followed that give the legislature an opportunity to review and comment on or choose not to accept those funds as they become available.
And Mr. Albrecht, before you continue, and I don't want to get you ahead of your presentation necessarily, but do all the funds that we're receiving from the federal government have requirements that the state provide some kind of a matching component, and or do they all require certain conditions on how they are spent? Can you just, and maybe you're intending to do this later on, but I'm interested to know some clarification on what what are the conditions that we receive the federal money?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I would guess, I don't want to make a blanket statement, that all of the funds have matching requirements. In my experience, most of them do, of various proportions. Usually it's a percentage. Sometimes it could be a specific dollar amount. Some of these grants are pretty small, so they could be 100% to go and do some activity. And my understanding, anyway, is that generally they don't give us money just to for us to decide what we want to do with it. Usually the purpose for which they're giving it is relatively prescribed. Moving on to page 14 is how the money in the federal fund is distributed among the agencies in the jurisdiction of the committee. And again, you can see the largest proportion is going to the Department of Human Services. It's about $11.6 billion. About $8.7 billion of that money is for the MA program. The Department of Health at 4% is about $500 million. And there are almost too many sources of that money to count.
8% of this is MA.
Page 15 shows the Federal TANF Reserve Fund. This is a complement to the federal fund. It exists mostly to meet a requirement at the federal level that TANF funds be specifically appropriated by the legislature. And also, I believe it supports some reporting requirements that the state has to report back to the federal government on how the money is spent. The money in this fund is for the state's MFIT program, which is our TANF program, and also for the diversionary work program and some support services grants for MFIP recipients. On page 16, as you might expect, most of the money in the TANF program is spent in the Department of Human Services with a little bit for the Department of Health. On page 17 is what's called the Environmental Fund. And from this fund, the Department of Health receives $57,000 each year for a program to identify and monitor toxic chemicals in products used by children. You can see as the amounts get smaller, it's relatively easier to specifically state what it's for. On page 18 is the Remediation Fund. Similarly, it's money that goes to the Department of Health, $252,000 each year. And what they do with this money is conduct private water supply monitoring and health assessments in areas contaminated by unpermitted municipal solid waste disposal facilities. And they also use it to distribute public information in areas that have been contaminated by hazardous releases. On page 19 is the Medical Education and Research Costs Fund. This is also referred to as the MERC Fund for its acronym. The revenue sources for this fund are a specific amount from the cigarette tax and an amount included in the state's PMAP rates. That's the prepaid medical assistance program. And I believe that the federal share of that amount is deposited into the MERC Fund. For the 2012-13 biennium, the amount in the MERC fund is about $169 million. It's distributed to medical education programs according to statutory requirements, and it's administered by the Department of Health. Page 20 shows the amounts for the gift fund that exists to receive gifts, bequests, or endowments to the state. You can see the amounts there that go to Human Services, the Department of Health, and the Emergency Medical Services Board. The total is $363,000 for the 2012-13 biennium. And similarly, on the next page is what's called the endowment fund. The difference between this fund and the gift fund is that the state apparently has received an endowment from somebody in the past, and what comes through this fund is the investment income on that amount that currently is about $2,000 for the biennium, is about $1,000 each year that goes to the Department of Human Services. And that, Mr. Chair, is the end of the section for the entire committee's jurisdiction.
So now we know all that we need to know to balance the budget. Is that, I'm being facetious. So what this represents are the separate funds that fund the seven components that are under the jurisdiction of this committee. Of
that,
of all these funds that you've led us through, is it fair to say that the majority of our work will be on the first piece, the general fund, since that's where our deficit or our imbalance between revenue and projected spending occurs, and the other funds will be, at least the resources are allocated or arrive in those funds from other places. And so is that a fair way to look at this, that the major work that we're going to be dealing with in terms of our budget will be in the general fund?
Yes, Mr. Chair. However, the interaction, I think, with the federal fund and the general fund, to the extent that the committee is focusing its work on medical assistance, the changes in the federal fund flow from whatever changes you make in the general fund.
Okay. Very good. Are there any questions at this point? And if by any members? All right. Would you like to proceed to the next part of the puzzle here?
Sure. Senator?
Yes, Senator Sheridan.
Thank you. I'm sorry, I was going to ask this before, but you were on a roll. So I'm going back, and I didn't number my sheets, Mr. Albrecht, but it's the health and, is this 12?
Yes.
Ah, there it is, page 12, the Health and Human Services Special Revenue Fund. The source of the special revenue fund are fees and permits and, is that correct, licensing fees for people who are want to be nurses or hygienists or have various boards. Is that correct, the special revenue funds? Or what is the source of revenue? Remind me again of the special revenue fund source of funding, where that money comes from.
Mr. Chair and Senator Sharon, those amounts could be some of the kinds of things that are run through the special revenue fund, yes.
And if I may continue.
Senator Sharon.
Because you mentioned that you thought that the Department of Human Services' 83% share of the special revenue fund was billed from state-operated services, I was confused about where the revenue stream came from and what you were referring to as what you thought might be payments to state-operated services. I got a disconnect there. I didn't understand that relationship.
Mr. Albright.
Mr. Chair and Senator Sharon, I was explaining, because it's such a large amount of money, and I figured you all would notice that. So I wanted to understand better why it's such a large amount of money. And the biggest single chunk of that 83% is an amount in state-operated services where state-operated services acts as a provider of services. And so they bill for those services, and that money is run through the special revenue fund.
I see. Thank you. That makes it clear.
Sure. Thank you. Any other questions at this point? Mr. Albrecht, do you want to proceed?
Mr. Chair and members, we are on page 22. This is moving into the Department of Human Services. Their share of the all funds budget is $25.6 billion, and that is 39.6% of the state's all funds budget. And you'll notice now as we start working through these that basically we're going to kind of do the same sort of approach for the individual departments that we did for the overview of the entire committee's jurisdiction. So the next thing to do on page 23 is a list for the Department of Human Services and the amounts for the various funds for that department. And similar to the entire committee, you'll see that the general fund and the federal fund are the two biggest amounts of money, and that the health care access fund also is about 5% of all of the funds for the Department of Human Services. On page 24, these are the amounts and proportions for the general fund, $11.5 billion, and that is 29.7% of all general fund spending. One thing that you will grow to learn, I'm sure, quickly is the largest proportion of general fund spending in the Department of Human Services. It's about 83%. And it's for health care and long-term care, and generally in the MA program. That's evident on page 25, where this shows how the general fund amounts are distributed among the major activities that the Department of Human Services does. You can see that basic health care is 47%. $5.4 billion. Continuing care grants, that is where the money for elderly and disabled people shows up, is $3.8 billion. The amount for the MA expansion, which is also part of the MA program, obviously, is $384 million. For state-operated services, and this is an oversight on my part, and I apologize that the amount for the sex offender program got combined with state-operated services, and that amount is $135 million of that $510 million. Down in the lower right-hand corner is the amount in children in economic assistance. That's where you'll find the MFIT program. That's about $1.1 billion. And aside from that, over on in the left-hand corner is the agency management of about $195 million, representing 2% of the agency's general fund spending. Moving on to page 26, this is the amount for the Department of Human Services in the Special Revenue Fund. It's $565,000 each year. Saying that it's for licensing administrative operations is a bit of a mischaracterization of the money. I did some more learning and investigating about what exactly this money is, and it's got a pretty complicated history that we might need someone from the department to tell us a little bit more about at some point. But my understanding of it is that it's related to oversight activities in nursing homes for vulnerable adults, which is related to licensing only in the sense that the state licenses nursing homes. Page 27 is the Health Care Access Fund for the Department of Human Services. And what it's used for, you can see the biggest proportion, 78%, or $1.7 billion, is for payments under Minnesota Care. Related to that, in some sense, is the $415 million in savings to Minnesota Care that come from the MA expansion. That's that amount that shows in brackets. So the total in this fund is about $1.4 billion when you net those two things out. The administration for Minnesota Care is about $61.8 million, or 3% of the spending in the Health Care Access Fund. Page 28 is the Special Revenue Fund. We talked a little bit about this fund and how it works, and Senator Sharon's question helped me to clarify that. This fund also would receive program participation fees or fees paid by people who are in a variety of programs that might include recoveries that come from people. For example, if they go into a program and have their own insurance, the department might recover some portion of the amount spent for them in that program. There are some funds for developmentally disabled people who participate in work activities where they put things together for sale. They sell those things. The money goes back into the fund so that they can continue earning money through those programs and buying materials for those programs. Moving on to page 29. This is how the money in the Special Revenue Fund for DHS is distributed. The largest proportion of it is goes into the Systems Fund. This is one of those things that is appropriated to the department in the general fund, and then they have transfer authority to move it into this Special Revenue Fund and spend it out of this fund. Similarly is the right below that, the Consolidated Chemical Dependency Treatment Fund. It's almost $100 million. And then some smaller amounts for a variety of other activities within the department. Page 30 is the federal fund. This one looks a little bit different than all of the other graphs that I have included in this presentation. I wanted to give you more detailed information on the various programs that are funded through the federal fund and their relative proportions. So the way to read this grant and the legend below it, the biggest one, the biggest program is the 81% block that's for medical assistance, and the next largest is the 10% for food stamps. So if you read the legend, you know, across rather than down, and follow each one of those various slices, then you can see how they match up. However, I will point out that it's quite obvious, after medical assistance and food stamps, all of those other things are 1% or less of the total amounts in the federal fund for the Department of Human Services. Moving on to page 31. Still with the Department of Human Services, rather than devoting single pages to these things, I combined some under other funds. The TANF Reserve Fund is $397 million. The gift fund for the department is $67,000. And the endowment fund is $2,000. Mr. Chair, that's the end of the overview for the department. The next thing to do, if you wanted to keep going with that, would be to go over some of the major programs in the Department of Human Services.
Okay. And any questions at this point, members? What I've asked Mr. Albrecht to do is to try to help us by giving us some pretty high-level overview numbers and then try to step into this a little bit at a time and give you a chance, I hope, to absorb this as best we can before we have to start making decisions about it. And so if I just want to make sure we stop, and if there are questions about what you've heard so far, not that we can't ask them later, but it's a good time to do that. And if you don't, then I'm going to ask Mr. Albrecht to proceed and start going into some of the detail in programs. So any questions? Mr.
Okay.
Albrecht, go ahead.
So on page 32 are some major programs. It's a term that I chose, first of all, nobody else. And so the list of these programs are also my choosing. I chose these because they're obviously some of the larger expenditures within the Department of Human Services. And in my experience, which admittedly is short for this committee, these are the programs that you are likely to hear a lot of discussion about. I don't want to lead you to believe that these are the only programs administered to the Department of Human Services. There are many others that are very important to a variety of people. You will hear about those programs. My understanding from talking with the chair is that at some point in the next few weeks, we will have an opportunity to hear from the department and have them come and talk to you about all of their programs and how those programs are funded and how those programs operate. This is the highest level perspective that I can give you on these programs. My knowledge of the details of them is obviously somewhat limited, but I certainly know enough about how much money is going to the programs and generally what they do. So hopefully we can just get through at that level for now.
And Mr. Albrecht, before you proceed, and I don't want to ask you something that you're not prepared to answer, but these programs you've listed on page 32, if you were going to put the dollar amounts, does this represent, 90% of the human services budget? Any idea what we're talking about in terms of the dollars that are being committed to these programs?
I would guess that might be a good guess, given that medical assistance alone is 83%.
Okay.
Mr. Chair and members, I also want to point out that as we are going through these, to keep in mind that all of the amounts are for 2 years, and where I do reference the number of people who participate in the programs, those are the numbers for 1 year. So if you're going to do math in your head, you need to either cut the amount in half or double the number of people. Moving on to page 33, we're going to start with the medical assistance program. It is a federal health care entitlement program. The state of Minnesota receives 50% match for the federal government. The people eligible for that program are low-income families, elderly, and disabled people. The MA expansion is for adults without children, and those are adults without children who are below 75% of the federal poverty guideline. There are federal requirements in the MA program, which at the federal level is called Medicaid. There are federal requirements for who's eligible and what services they get when they're in the program. And states have the options to expand above the federal minimum requirements, but not below. On page 34, I don't know how your packets are put together, but page 34 and page 35 are helpful to see next to each other. or if not that, at least to flip back and forth between the two. Because what this shows you on page 34 are the average number of people in the MA program, and on page 35 it shows you the distribution of expenditures in the MA program. And what I think is important for you to understand is for families with children, they're 63% of the people, but if you look on page 35, they're only 25% of the cost. Similarly, for elderly and disabled, they're only 24% of the people, but they're 64% of the cost. And you can see there for the adults without children that they're relatively proportional to their numbers. They're 13% of the number of people and 11% of the cost in the program.
And Mr. Albrecht, just again for clarification, on page 34, when you talk about monthly average $773,000, this is... I assume what you're saying is that these numbers are not constant. There's not the same number of people, or maybe not even the same people, month to month that are enrolled in the various programs. And so for purposes of tracking how many people are being served, this represents sort of a net of incoming, outgoing movement among participants. Is that a fair way to put that?
Mr. Chair, that is my understanding of what that number represents. Okay, moving on then to page 36 is would be the Minnesota Care program. That program provides health care services to people who don't have access to affordable health insurance. Participants need to meet income and program guidelines, and they need to pay monthly premiums that are based on their income. Couple of statistics, 73.4% have incomes below 150% of the federal poverty guidelines, and there are about 118,000 enrolled people per month. There's a substantial proportion of the population in this program that is affected by the MA expansion, and the way that they're affected is that they're transferred from Minnesota Care to MA, producing substantial savings that we've seen in some of the previous charts. And that savings is in the Minnesota program, mostly because those people are no longer going to be there.
And Mr. Albrecht, and just going back a couple of pages when you had your summary of the medical assistance, assuming what you're saying is that the Minnesota Care individuals that are adults without children who are currently in Minnesota Care would move over to the Medicare, the MA expansion services. Is that what you're saying?
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Okay. And do you have the number of people offhand who the numbers that are affected? I think I saw those recently.
I have seen those numbers, Mr. Chair, but I don't have them memorized.
We'll get those for people.
Senator Hahn?
Yes, Senator Sharon.
I'm sorry. It takes me a while to absorb what you're saying, so I'm going back a couple pages again to make sure I understood. On page 34, the monthly recipients, this looks like about 24% are disabled and elderly. Of the total number, about 24% of the number is elderly and disabled. So I'm assuming that the movement in and out of here comes from families with children, maybe, and maybe adults with no children. But also what's striking, if I understand this correctly, is that when you turn the page and look at the percentage of the total number who are in this program as opposed to the percentage of expenditure on the next page, 64%, I understand you are saying, is being spent for about 24% of the monthly recipients who are probably pretty consistently staying in this program. Is that a fair analysis of what you're saying to us?
Mr. Chair and Senator Roebling, I really don't know that much about the
Senator
dynamics.
Sharon.
I'm sorry, Senator Sharon. I don't know that much about the dynamics of people moving in and out of various parts of the program, but I would guess that even among the elderly and disabled, there is some sort of churn in that population month to month.
Thank you. I would be interested in our understanding that because when we're looking at the budgetary issues, when 64% of this budget is applied to only 25 or 26% of that's a significant component of the expenditures here.
And Senator Sharon, and thank you for pointing that out. That was the when I first saw these numbers, I had the same sort of reaction that you've got a very disproportionate amount of people being served by the money. You'd think there'd be some comparability, but there really isn't. And one of the things that I would like to have the department do at the appropriate time is talk to us a little bit about what the trends have been in these programs. You know, what have been the numbers? How has it grown? If we think about the demographic projections that are being made, we know this is a section of the population that is going to grow. I think we need to understand what we're doing, what we're spending money for, and also, consequently, on the other side, the family with children piece, what are we doing there? I can't tell you right now that I am familiar enough with this to know exactly what the trends look like and what we are faced with, but that is exactly the kind of thing that we are going to have to understand if we are going to make choices and set priorities with the monies that we do have. And I think that's a good observation, and I was struck by the same thing. Thank you.
Okay, members, moving back then to page 37, this is the various sources of funding for Minnesota Care. The Health Care Access Fund is, as you might expect, the greatest amount. There is almost $500 million that comes from the federal fund, and that is MA matching money for MA-eligible populations in Minnesota Care. Minnesota Care does have a waiver from the federal government to include some of the people in that program as MA-eligible people. And that $81 million that comes from the Special Revenue Fund, that is the premiums that people in Minnesota Care pay to participate in the program. Moving on to page 38. Is the MFIP program, the Minnesota Family Investment Plan Program. I don't know why I wrote plan there. This is Minnesota's TANF program. There is a federal requirement for a 60-month lifetime limit on cash assistance. It's an employment-focused program with access to health care, child care, and employment services. It has, on average, about 36,900 families and about 100,000 people. And this also, the funding for this program also includes what's called the Diversionary Work Program, which is a short-term work-focused program to try and keep people out of the MFIP plan. On page 39, this is showing where the money comes from in the MFIP program. You can see that the vast majority comes from federal funds, significant proportion, almost half of it for food. Both the federal money and the state money, on the right-hand side there, the general fund and the federal TANF fund, that's the amounts that go to pay for the cash assistance and the other services, aside from child care is a different program that folks in the MFIP program receive. Next on page 40 is state operated services. This is the part of the department that provides direct services to persons with mental illness and neurocognitive disabilities and chemical addiction. For mental health services within state-operated services, the average daily population was 261 people, and 2,900 people received services in fiscal year 2010. Also in this part of the department is the Minnesota Security Hospital and the Forensics Nursing Home. As you can see on page 41, the vast majority of money for this purpose comes from the State General Fund. It's about $375 million, and there's another $30.7 million from the Special Revenue Fund.
And Mr. Albrecht, the General Fund dollars, those are expenditures that are targeted to specific programs, is that correct? That what we're doing is we're appropriating money to do particular things, and the accumulation of that is the $375 million. Is that how that works?
Mr. Chair and members, I would assume that there are a variety of programs in state-operated services, but that's where my in-depth knowledge of the actual activities within this category kind of ends.
And this may be a question we'll have to ask the department. I'm just trying to understand if these are things that are individually determined by the legislature and funded through appropriations, or if they're things that are being operated out of the authority of the department. I'm not clear yet, I guess, exactly what the activity is. But I'm not asking you to know all that. I was wondering if you understood what the relationship was. But you can go ahead.
Mr. Chair, generally, I'm not sure. I don't think the department does a whole lot without the legislature's direction.
we'll find out.
Senator Hahn?
I'm sorry, Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, maybe one of the important things people on this committee should know is that basically state-operated services serves people that are committed by the courts to the Commissioner of Corrections. So I would say that it isn't a discretionary program at the behest of the legislature.
And thank you, Senator Berglund, for clarifying that. That was what I was trying to understand. Thank you.
Moving on to page 42, is the General Assistance Program. This is a program that provides a maximum of $203 per month to individuals and couples without children. Eligibility for this program is related to one's inability to work or disability. There are about 20,000 people in any given month who receive a benefit. The funding for this program, and I believe we're not going to have a chart to show this because it's an entirely state-funded program, it's about $101 million for the biennium, and there's another $200,000. This is one of those cases where you don't add three zeros.
Mr. Albrecht, just a second.
In the Special Revenue Fund.
Senator Rosen has a question.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Albrecht, and how long do they receive those benefits?
Mr. Albrecht.
How long can they receive the benefits?
Mr. Chair and Senator Rosen, I don't think there's a limit, but I wouldn't swear to that.
If we could find that out, Mr. Chair.
Yes. We will find out if there is a limit on that, but thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Berglund.
The General Assistance Program, by and large, serves people that are waiting to be declared disabled by the federal government. And so in those cases, they would be receiving this $200 and some a month until such time as they're declared disabled. And any back payments that they receive would be offset against the money they receive from the general assistance account.
Thank you, Senator Berglund. Appreciate that. Mr. Albrecht.
Going on to page 43, we get to the Minnesota Sex Offender Program, which provides services to individuals who have completed their prison sentences and been civilly committed by the court and placed in sex offender treatment. In fiscal year 2010, there were 575 clients in this program, and the general fund appropriations in the forecast for this program are $135 million for the upcoming biennium for fiscal years 12 and 13. Moving on to page 44, this is the mental health services part of the department. It's separated into a variety of programs. This slide is focused on children's mental health grants, which fund services for children with mental illness. It's about $33.4 million for the biennium out of the general fund. It's for grants to counties, schools, and other entities. About 10,000 children were screened. I believe this is in the last fiscal year in the child welfare and juvenile justice programs. 2,800 children received case management, but these are not all of the children who receive services for that $33.4 million. There are others, but that will come out in our discussion with the department for more detailed information. On page 45, within the same category of spending as adult mental health grants, these are largely payments to counties and have served 55,000 people each year with mental illness. And in the little chart to the side there, you can see that funding for this activity comes from a variety of sources. Most of it, 90%, $155 million for the biennium, comes from the general fund. The next largest source is $11.4 million from the federal fund. The total for this activity is $171.7 million. Page 46 is chemical dependency services. I believe later we will talk about what are called non-entitlement grants. This is the amount of money devoted to CD entitlement grants. There are financial eligibility requirements. This amount of money in this program is for residential and outpatient addiction treatment services. A person has to be assessed as needing those services. There were about 27,000 placements in fiscal year 2009, and the average cost per admission is about $3,800. You can see in the chart on the right-hand side that the vast majority, in fact, all of this funding is state funding. The majority is in the general fund, $236 million, with another $88 million coming through the special revenue fund.
And Mr. Albrecht, the placements that you, the number for placements, does that, if there is a person that has more than one placement in a given year, is that counted every time that person would go into treatment would be counted, or are these unique individuals? Do you know that, or would we have to?
Mr. Chair and members, I do not know the answer to that question.
We'll see if we can get some clarification on that. Thank you.
On page 47 are the non-entitlement grants that I mentioned. This money is for prevention, intervention, and case management, treatment support, and recovery maintenance. It's administered in a 7-region system. by prevention coordinators. The number of people served, 41,000, is a pretty large number. It's through a variety of mechanisms that people are reached. Could be public information kinds of campaigns, those sorts of activities. The vast majority of this program, unlike the one before it, comes from the federal government. It's $29 million, which is 84% of the total $34 million for this activity. Page 48, this is part of the funding for child welfare services. There are other sources of funding in the department for this purpose. What is shown here is funding for what are called the Children's Services Grants. And these are grants for children who are at risk of abuse or neglect, have been abused or neglected, are in out-of-home placement, waiting for adoption, or under state guardianship. In fiscal year 2009, that meant services for about 48,000 children. And similar to the other programs, the funding is shown in the table there. $90 million coming from the general fund and $72 million coming from the federal fund, with smaller amounts from a variety of other state and federal funds. Mr. Chair, that's the end of the portion for the Department of Human Services. Next would be the Department of Health.
Well, and Mr. Albrecht, before we move on to that, just again, if you go back, members, and on page 2 of this handout that Mr. Albrecht has prepared, you've got the 7 areas that the committee has jurisdiction over. We've done an overview of the funds and looked in some level of detail at just one of those, the Department of Human Services. And, Mr. Albrecht, I think your intention is to walk us through the rest of these pieces, maybe not in quite the same level of detail because they're considerably smaller, but that's kind of where we are in the presentation. And we have got about 15 minutes more of our committee time. I'd like to ask you to proceed, but if there are questions at this point, again, we'd like to invite people to raise them, and we can always come back, but anything at this point. Go ahead, Mr. Albrecht.
As the chair indicated, members, the Department of Health budget is significantly smaller than the Department of Human Services. Its all funds budget is $1.1 billion, representing 1.7% of the state's all funds spending. And I think it's helpful to understand that 58% of the department's all funds money is distributed to local governments, nonprofit organizations, community hospitals, and teaching institutions. On page 50, you can see the proportions of the department's funding that come from various sources. I think what's different and important to note about this department is the amount and proportion coming from the federal fund. Almost 46% of the department's funding is federal funding. The general fund portion is $152 million, representing almost 14% of the department's funding. And also the other large fund is the what's shown here as the Medical Education Endowment Fund, and that is another name for the Merck Fund. Moving on to the next page, page 51, this is the general fund allocation to the Department of Health. It's $152 million. It represents 0.4% of the state's general fund budget, and again, 64% of the department's general fund budget is passed through to other organizations. On page 52, you can see that the Department of Health is organized into four major program areas: community and family health promotion, policy, quality and compliance, health protection, and administrative support. Page 53, this is where we're going to go into each of those four major areas. So for the first one, community and family health promotion, this shows you the various sources of money that are allocated to activities under that broad heading of a program. Again, as you might expect, based on what we saw at the beginning, 73% is coming from the federal fund. The next biggest chunk comes 20% from the state's general fund. The Department of Health has a lot of programs that they operate, partly because there's a bunch of very proportionately small grants that come from the federal government. So rather than give you all of that detail, what I did with the Department of Health was pick out some of the either more prominent or larger dollar programs under these activities, and I chose to highlight them. So under the Departments of Health Community and Family Health Promotion Program, one activity is community and family health. And funded underneath that are the programs listed there, the WIC program, local public health grants, et cetera. For example, the WIC program is a nutrition program that helps eligible pregnant women, new mothers, babies, and young children eat well and learn about nutrition and stay healthy. That is an entirely federally funded program, and it's $272.1 million. Local public health grants are they go to community health boards. There are 52 of them in the state of Minnesota, but they do reach all counties. Some of them are organized on a regional basis. That's why there's not 87 of them. And money for those grants comes from the general fund, about $46 million, and there is an amount from the TANF fund also, about $14 million.
Mr. Ulbrich, Senator Rosen has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Ulbrich, is that the local public health grants, does that include the SHIP dollars, the statewide health improvement program?
Mr. Ulbrich.
Mr. Chair and Senator Rosen, it does not.
Okay.
That's going to come on a later slide.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr.
Ulbrich.
Chair.
I'm sorry. Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Ulbrich, I didn't hear what you said, how much money for WIC and the local public health grants?
Mr. Chair and Senator Higgins, the WIC program is entirely federally funded, and it's $272.1 million. And the local public health grants are funded from the general fund, $46.7 million, and from the TANF fund, $13.9 million, almost $14 million.
13 point what?
13.9.
Thank you.
And I'll be honest, it's possible there are additional sources of money for some of these programs. The reports are not the easiest thing for me to sort through at this point, but I'm learning.
All right.
Other things funded under this area are the positive alternative grants and family planning grants. Positive alternatives gets about $4.9 million from the general fund. Family planning grants get about $8.4 million from the general fund and some money from the TANF fund, about $2.3 million. For fetal alcohol syndrome, that's a grant to the Minnesota Organization on Fetal Alcohol Syndrome. That's a general fund appropriation of $3.3 million. The Maternal and Child Health Grant is a federal grant to promote activities to improve the health of mothers and children. It's about $17.4 million. Healthcare Homes is a reform initiative from a package of reforms that were implemented in 2008. That's funded through the Healthcare Access Fund, and it's about $3.4 million. Continuing on to page number 55, this is more activities under community and family health promotion. One of which would be promoting health and monitoring of chronic diseases. Some of the diseases that the department tries to keep track of and assess are cardiovascular disease, diabetes, asthma, and stroke. Under this activity also is the brain injury and trauma registry. That's funded out of the Special Revenue Fund, about $2.7 million. There are numerous federal grants under this area. Two of the prominent ones are a cancer registry that receives about $2 million of federal funding, and what's known as the SAGE screening program. That's for low-income women, and it's screening for breast cancer and cervical cancer. It's about $11.1 million. Another activity would be poison information centers. That's a general fund appropriation of about $2.2 million. And it helps people to determine the best way to treat poisoning and provides a statewide information and education resource about poisoning.
And Mr. Albrecht, just going back to the chronic disease monitoring, is that funding from the state general fund or is that federal monies or a combination?
Mr. Chair and members, that's funding that comes from a variety of sources.
Variety of sources. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Higgins.
Once again, I didn't catch how much the chronic disease monitoring was.
Mr. Albrecht.
Mr. Chair and Senator Higgins, that's because I didn't say.
Mr. Albrecht, do you know that offhand? Or?
Mr. Chair, I do not.
Okay. And Senator Higgins, we'll try to get more detail on this. Mr. Albrecht, do you want to try to finish the
yep.
family health, community and family health promotion section here?
And that's on the moving on to page 56 then. Another activity under this program is minority multicultural health. The biggest single thing under that area is eliminating health disparities grants. Money comes from a variety of sources, about $6.3 million from the general fund. About $240,000 from a grant from the Bremer Foundation that's run through the Special Revenue Fund. And there is $4 million in the TANF Fund. The focus of these activities is on, I believe, seven areas: infant mortality, immunization, breast and cervical cancer, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, HIV, AIDS, and sexually transmitted diseases, and violence prevention. Next is the Statewide Health Improvement Program. This is a statewide program that received funding in the current biennium in 2010-11. It's not ongoing funding, so currently there's no money in the budget to continue these activities beyond the end of this fiscal year. It is a statewide program to target tobacco use and obesity with the goal of reducing future health care expenditures. The grants went to, and they were about $47 million, to community health boards, and they funded activities in all 87 counties.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Albrecht, we've got a couple of minutes before our time to conclude, and I want to use this as a useful break, perhaps, in your presentation. Let's see if there are any further questions. Seeing none, I first of all, thank you for putting this together for us, and we'll continue to hopefully get through the rest of this, your presentation, next week when we meet. Just a reminder, tomorrow, members, we're meeting at 10:30, which is our normal time, and we will be hearing some presentations about health insurance. So we'll take a break from the exciting and stimulating numbers and budget review. But I hope you have some patience with this, members. I know this is kind of dry. These are the numbers that are in the forecast, but they represent where we are or where we think we are today. And given the fact that we are going to have to do some adjusting, I think it's very important that we do everything we can to understand what these numbers, how big they are, where they come from, where the money comes from, where it's being spent. We will have an opportunity to hear from members of the department to answer questions in detail about what the programs are doing, so to help you to understand what the money is being used for, what it's accomplishing. And I think those are things that we need to know. We're going to have to, I believe, set some priorities and do some adjusting. And I'm hoping that this information will be useful as we get closer to that decision-making time frame to help us to understand what are the things that we have to focus on. I think just another general comment, we obviously have only one committee for Health and Human Services this year. Last year, previous years, we've had two. We are responsible for both the budget and policy issues in this committee. To be honest, I want to focus primarily on budget issues this year. Certainly, we'll be happy to talk about policy matters as they relate to dealing with the budget, but I'm going to try, not to say exclusively, but try to look at policy matters that may not have an effect on the budget, perhaps for next year, just so that we can focus on trying to do the things we need to do to solve the budget. So that doesn't mean we won't. If there are some things that are particularly important that we want to deal with that are policy, we will do that. But I want to focus primarily on the budget this year. Any questions at this point from any members? Or any comments in conclusion? Thank you again for your willingness to serve on the committee and your attendance. And just a reminder for the new members in particular, leave your folders here with anything that you want to retain. You don't have to carry everything back with you if you don't wish. We'll keep them for you. And with that, our meeting is adjourned.
Look forward to, yes. We have too many long hours later.
I went over to the table and
I got to ask if he's using this clocker in the regular clock. This one is 5 minutes fast, 4 minutes fast.
Audience packets.